Welcome to The Last Tranche, the Credit Flux podcast where we break down global structured credit one tranche at a time. I'm Tom Davidson, managing editor of Credit Flux, and we're very lucky today to have one of the most influential people in the CLO market with us. Christine Ferris is a global head of CLO primary at JP Morgan and a fellow New Yorker. She's been with the bank for more than 16 years, and under her watch, it has grown into one of the largest players in the CLO market. We're going to talk a little about the amazing start to the year the CLO primary market has had, but our focus is going to be a little different. New CLO managers and Christine's experiences getting them over the line for that first deal. So thanks again for joining me, Christine.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I have to say, it's great to have another female guest on the podcast, especially one running a major global team. I'd love to hear about your own history and how you came to be here.
It's funny, I'm an accidental banker in a lot of ways. I've been at JP my whole career. I've been an investment banker my whole career. But I actually started as a psychology major at undergrad at Yale University. And I loved the major. I loved everything about it. I thought it was so interesting. I was a part of a bunch of different graduate labs. And I did it one summer and I realized, actually, I don't like the work of, you know, being a psychologist. And so my junior year, I went back and I thought about what I might want to do. And all the big investment banks were recruiting, including JP Morgan on campus. I came to JP Morgan and really have been here ever since. So I started in structured credit sales right after the financial crisis. We were doing a lot of derivatives, kind of restructuring and working with different banks to restructure their derivative exposure after the financial crisis. And that kind of led to when the cash product and CLOs started coming back, me being a structured credit salesperson, selling CLOs. I remember at the time, the head of the primary business and the head of secondary trading were like, hey, you're actually quite good at selling CLOs. We should try to get you more accounts. And, I subsequently was given the opportunity to actually join the primary side of the business, join the CLO primary team. And I was tasked with really helping to rebuild CLO syndicate and distribution at JP Morgan following the financial crisis. You know, JP Morgan had a huge team pre-crisis, maybe like 100 people, and that was whittled down to kind of 2 people. And as JP Morgan is, different people on the existing team found other opportunities and went to different parts of the firm. I was brought on to kind of restart and rebuild and work on the team that got the distribution going again in CLOs. And then my manager at the time, Vivek, he got an amazing opportunity to, you know, build out asset management at Antares after it was acquired by CPPIB. And, you know, as he left, I was given the opportunity to actually run the CLO primary business globally. So I really started as kind of a marketer by background and was lucky enough at a fairly young age to be given the opportunity to run the global business.
It's a great story. And you already talked about the team. It probably makes sense for us to fill in the listeners on the current structure of the team at JP Morgan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, CLO primary was historically a standalone business. I reported into a guy named Austin Garrison, who was the head of North America credit trading. But JP Morgan did a big restructuring a little more than a year ago, where we reorganized into global product silos. And so instead of having North America and EMEA and being organized regionally, they actually made leverage finance, investment grade alternatives, and credit financing. And so I roll up in through credit financing. It's run by a really smart guy named Jake Pollack. And, you know, under that purview, he manages the legacy credit financing business, which is largely private credit financing, the CLO business, and the loan TRS business. And I think that that's so important because as we see the world change and as we see credit markets change, and, you know, a very buzzy word is private credit, another buzzy word is convergence, and everyone talks about the convergence between the public and the private markets. I think it's so important to not only want to win in all arenas, but be organized to win in all arenas. And I think that's exactly what management, and I give them a lot of credit, but management at JP Morgan did. They recognized that there was a change in the markets and they reorganized so that we would be best positioned to most seamlessly service our clients in that new world order.
Great. Before we go into the new managers we're going to talk about for the bulk of the podcast, it's probably worth setting the scene by just talking about the primary market more generally, both here in the US and also in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I had to summarize it, I'd say the market is open and investors have cash. I would say that we've started the year really strong. We've had close to $80 billion of issuance in the U.S. year to date. It's up 150%. We've had just over $13 billion, both new issue and refi resets in Europe. That's up over 100%, or just about 100%. I think that not only are we running ahead of last year's pace from a new issue perspective, but there's also been a huge uptick in refi resets. And that's all as a result of compressing spreads. It's funny, I was at the ABS Miami conference, ABS East, in October of last year, and I was up on a panel and I was asked to give my forecast and projections for the year ahead. And I actually said that based on the technicals in the market, I thought that AAAs would be at 140. And there was actual snickering in the audience. And people I know were laughing at me out there. In my mind, having been in this market long enough, we know that when loans are approaching par, CLO AAAs have been in and around that, call it 140 area. And the technicals were just so strong, both from a loan and a CLO tranche perspective. And what I mean by that is, we knew that there wasn't as much loan issuance. We knew that there was an uptick in CLO issuance, especially in Q4 of last year. We also knew that 40% of the CLOs in the overall market would be out of reinvest by the end of last year. And so those are a lot of really powerful supply and demand technicals kind of coalescing around AAA spreads having to go tighter. Again, barring any huge macro disruption, which of course is a possibility. But the technicals alone, I think in my mind, dictated that we were going to be tighter. And that's exactly what we saw to start the year. In and around the Opal conference, which was in December, we were at 170 bips. We came back from that. We quickly priced a deal for Palmer Square at 165, set new tights in the market. Then we did a CIFC deal at the end of the year at 160. And that really set the stage to open the year in and around 150 to 55. And that's where we got to in pretty short order. And that's kind of where we are today. So I think that we've seen a really quick and impressive, but not terribly surprising, in my opinion, compression in AAA spreads. And that's also catalyzed greater demand in equity. So last year, so much of equity that was distributed was retained by managers until Q4, when we really did distribute a decent amount of CLO equity. This year, I would say that the majority plus of equity that we sell/raise is actually sold to true CUSIP investors and third parties. So it's a huge difference. I think the CLO arbitrage, just given the compression in spreads, looks attractive. And the demand on the equity side of things is pretty healthy as well.
I was there in Miami. I have to admit, I wasn't snickering at you, but I was a little skeptical in the audience.
Okay, so you can verify that I did say that, right?
I can absolutely verify. We're more in the low 150s in the US. Do you think there's a little bit more tightening to go for the rest of the year to hit your 140 target?
Again, barring any huge macro disruption, I do think that it's going to be push and pull all year. So the arbitrage looks good. Refis and resets that seemed like they would never be in the money are very much in the money. And so while the financing, spreads are attractive, the reality is that's going to be met with a lot of supply. So I think that all year there's going to be a little bit of a seasonality. And what I mean by that is, payment dates and CLOs happen typically the month after quarter end. Loans pay at quarter end, generally speaking, and then CLOs collect the money and pay thereafter. And so when we see a payment date, given the fact that 40% of the market-ish is out of reinvestment, we're going to expect to see people have pay downs. And ahead of that, we're going to see investors, AAAs especially, look to redeploy capital and kind of prepare to replace that capital.
Great. Well, let's move on to the focus of this podcast, which is new managers, bringing new managers to the CLO market. And this is an area I know where you've had a lot of experience in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a passion of mine. I know I've been in running the global business for, 7 years now. I have to say, I love working on new manager mandates. I grew up as a marketer. I grew up in marketing and syndicate. And it's funny because when I became, co-heads of the business in 2016, I really was kind of like the new kid on the block, right? All my peers were MDs, pre-crisis MDs in most cases, even people that were running syndicate were MDs, right? Let alone the person running the business. And one, as an aside, they can only do that at a place like JP Morgan, right? They can give young people opportunity because the franchise is so strong. But secondly, I was realistic about the fact that this is a relationship business and I didn't have 10, 15, 20 years of relationships with some of the managers that, you know, some of my competitors had. And so I, one, love marketing and I love building and being part of people's story as they try to build something and really grow their own careers. But two, just out of necessity, I was realistic about the fact that, hey, like, it seems pretty good. I'm newer, they're newer. Like, we both have a clean slate. I'm going to work really hard on this and be successful in it. And I should also add, it doesn't hurt, obviously, that JP Morgan has anywhere from 20 to 30% market share in leveraged finance at any given point. Clearly, if you're a new manager, you need access to loans. And JP Morgan is a pretty good place to be aligned with, just given the market share that we have. And so I think because of a combination of all those things, we ended up as a firm doing more new and debut manager deals. I still get involved in every single new manager deal that we do because, you know, when somebody's trusting you with their first deal, they're trusting you in a lot of ways with their livelihood. They're trusting you with their career. And it's not about the transaction. Of course, we're going to execute it, but it's not about the trade. It's really about holding somebody's hand and like walking with them and saying, hey, like I'm committing to you that I'm going to help you build your business. And not just in the context of this trade, but in the long run. And that's a commitment that I take really seriously. When someone mandates us, it's a responsibility I think our team takes really seriously. But the consequence of having had basically 50% market share in that domain over the last 10, call it years, is that we're really good at it. And we're really good at selling harder mandates, right? It's much easier to have a business where all you do is the most liquid managers, you know, but the majority plus of my business is working on real marketing projects. And so when we have a really liquid manager in a harder market environment, we're super well equipped to execute on that. And you see that time and again when we're executing print and sprints or when there's a hairy situation that comes up in a trade, we get good feedback from managers on that all the time. So I think that one of the positive benefits beyond the obvious is just our ability and the athleticism we have around marketing and distribution because we work so hard and focus so much on the new manager space.
So looking back over that 10 plus years, are there any managers who particularly stick out? Are there any deals which you particularly remember working on?
It's hard to pick a favorite because I love and believe in the space so much. I think it's just like the most exciting part of my job. But I recently came up on the 10-year anniversary of my first new manager mandate, which is Palmer Square. And they've obviously been a tremendous success. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that thus far they've entrusted me with every new product category that they've chosen to launch. So we did their debut deals. We launched their static deals in the US. We launched their static deal in Europe. I couldn't be prouder of the role that we were lucky enough to play in that. And clearly the hard work is on them in terms of actually doing what they said that they were going to do and delivering on that. They've had phenomenal performance, but you know, you see success stories like that, and it's easy to see why it's an interesting space to be in.
It's crazy to think it's only 10 years ago that they got into the CLO management business because, you know, they're such a big part of the market now.
And that's CLO 2.0, right? In some ways, it feels like just yesterday, but it's been a decade and there are a lot of new players. And if you think about our market, I think about 2017 and before, and the market was just so different, especially post-COVID, actually, I should say. There's so many new investors in our market and the perception of our market is totally different. Like pre-COVID, I think that people were always worried about what's the next thing that's going to break the CLO market? When is it going to fall apart? When are defaults going to tick up, and et cetera? But not only in the GFC, but also through COVID, CLOs proved really resilient and the performance proved really strong. So the cumulative default rate of double Bs, and it doesn't get talked about enough, is like 1% and change over a 30-year track record. Double Bs, the lowest, generally, the lowest rated debt tranche in the entire capital stack. So when we talk about leveraged loan default rates at 2 or 3% and we call that low, like the reality is that's an annual number. We're talking about now a 25 to 30 year kind of cumulative history here. And so I think after the COVID crisis and, you know, after the performance was shown to be very robust once again, it's just brought in so many new investors. So our markets, you know, more than doubled in size in the last 5 years. And it just feels so different than it did just 5 years ago.
We'll have to have another podcast to talk about structured finance ratings versus corporate credit ratings. But let's stick with new managers. Moving on from the past to the present, in the current environment, how easy is it for a new debut manager to price in, say, the US?
I have to say, I never like it when people use the word easy to describe CLO originations. Even in the best of times, there's just so much involved, right? Like there's a manager who has their opinion about how they want to manage the portfolio. There are investors, both debt and equity, who have their opinions about what's good for them and what they care about. And by the way, even within a class of AAA investors, different investors can have different opinions about how they want the deal to look. So coordinating all of that is not ever easy. But yes, on a relative basis, I would say that if spreads are any indication, it is easier now than it has been in prior years. So in any given kind of market, the basis between the tightest spread managers and new managers is a pretty good indication of how, quote unquote, easy it is. And so in a market like last year, the basis between the absolute tights and debut managers was anywhere from, 30 to 40 basis points. And I think that historically, that's not abnormal. You know, it's probably on the wider end, but it isn't abnormal. Today, I think that you could get a new or a second time manager done. And actually, we've seen second time managers get done really just 15 to maybe 20 wide of where the absolute tights are. And so I do think that there's been significant kind of compression in spreads between the haves and have nots. And from that standpoint, I think it's a really good time to be a debut manager because you do have the ability to price your liabilities at levels that are more in line with the absolute tights of the market.
As you say, nothing in CLOs is ever easy. What are some of the challenges which new managers face?
I think the biggest question managers have is, when can I sell equity? How am I going to sell equity? What's the process for selling equity? If I was in the business of executing a trade, I wouldn't even ask or answer that question. But I am always, when we go into a new manager mandate, pushing managers to think about not day one, but like, what does day two look like? You know, so it's all well and good that you have 100 to 200 million of capital to get you started, but that's really not going to last you that long. You know, that maybe covers you for whatever, 2 billion of issuance. And 2 billion of issuance isn't a point where you've now reached escape velocity as a platform and you can kind of self-sustain. So I think that there's so many things that you could do early on in your manager kind of issuance process to set yourself up for success with regards to being able to, you know, raise equity capital on the follow and really be a self-sustaining business. So I think that the hardest thing has always been and continues to be, you know, really like, how do we source third-party equity or fund equity even? And how do we continue to beyond the first 2 billion of issuance and thrive as a platform?
Great. And I'm sure there's also challenges at the top of the stack, as you well know, and our listeners do. Some of the biggest CLO AAA buyers, like, you know, long track records from managers. How do you approach, and I guess this is somewhat on you to solve, but how do you approach dealing with that problem?
I would like to call it an opportunity. But I think the reality is, again, like, I really think it's important to educate our managers on deal one. And so I don't just go and execute a trade and say, here are your three buyers, good, done. I think through, like, really, what is the best combination of investors for this transaction in this market environment? Like, what's the strategy here? And so much of it is about educating the manager about what the landscape is. Who are the parties? Who's, you know, active? Who's not active? Who can write big tickets? Who's important, even though they're writing $25, $50 million tickets? So I think that, you know, meeting as many of those investors as early on as possible is super important for the future growth of your platform. It's not just, again, about executing the trade. It's about setting the table and setting it up in, like, a really nice and tidy way. I would say that we're very focused on educating the manager and making sure they meet as many of the key investors as early on as possible.
Great. Another thing which I'm interested in is the comparisons between the US and Europe. And now Europe saw, I think, 7 new managers last year. And despite the challenging market conditions there, and there's talk about another 5, 6, 7 this year as well. Why is that? Why is it so different in Europe? Why are there so many more new managers who come out there?
I would say in the US, the normal run rate for debut managers was 6 to 7 a year. In Europe, it was 1 to 2, and then all of a sudden you saw 7. So I completely agree with you that it was very, like, eye-popping. But on the flip side, I think it makes sense in a market environment where so many of the incumbents are global, large asset managers. There are only a handful of independent CLO-only or smaller managers in Europe, right? So in the US, if there's 150 managers, there's a mix, right? In Europe, if there's 50, now there's more than that, but say there's 50 managers, a lot of them are going to be skewed towards the big global asset managers. And the big global asset managers, at least historically, and that's changing, but at least historically, have relied on third-party equity. So in a market environment where there was just less third-party equity to go around, there was actually a huge opportunity for new managers to come in and say, hey, I actually have access to equity capital. Or maybe I was somebody that was considering buying third-party equity, but I want to build it in-house and kind of save on the external management fees. You know, so the math of manager-owned equity is different from third-party equity.
And I think one of the other fascinating things for me is that, you know, for the last, I think, as long as I've been in the market, the talk has always been, you can be a debut manager, but you have to have a big leveraged loan book. You have to have that business with a lot of history. And of course, in Europe, at the end of last year, we saw Arini come in. They're already back with their second deal with none of that behind them. I guess showing that there are a variety of different paths to CLO management that that do still work.
Yeah, I would say that at least for me, we've, if I think back on our book of business, we've brought to market a really wide range of different types of managers. They're not all big leverage finance platforms. Maybe some have a big high yield business and no loan business, and this is their entree into loans. You know, maybe some of them have big leverage loan businesses, but no CLO business in particular. It's been a good mix, I would say, of different types of managers. So I think what you really need is you need to show that you can manage credit, right? Like, do you have the people, are you staffed to actually manage the credits? Can you manage structure? It's good if you know how to manage credit, but like, can you manage within the CLO? It's not just the same as managing it outright. And then really about the stability of the platform and access to the equity capital to, again, reach that escape velocity.
Right. So are there any specific difficulties for private credit CLOs looking to launch in the US?
I love this question. I love private credit CLOs. I think it's just so exciting. So just to give a little bit of background, private credit CLOs historically have been about 10% of the overall US issuance market. And last year, and we had the view going into last year, and that's why we did this restructuring. But last year, it was just over 20%. And this year, it's on track to be around 20% as well, year to date. And I think the reason why it's so interesting is historically, CLO investors have thought about two categories of CLOs, private credit CLOs, which were previously called middle market CLOs, and broadly syndicated CLOs. And then, of course, US and Europe. That was it. And then within broadly syndicated CLOs, you were like, there's tier one, there's tier two, there's tier three. That's not a whole lot of nuance. In private credit, I think it's so interesting because in any given deal, the range of outcomes and the range of underlying collateral is so great. So in BSL, like the variability that we're talking amongst this 150 manager pool is like, are you a 2% CCC manager or are you a 3.5%? That's literally like the kinds of things that we talk about in BSL CLOs. In private credit, there are some deals that we look at that are 550 WAS and some that are 700 WAS. And the actual way that people originate the transactions, that they look at the collateral, that they think about the collateral, that they manage the collateral over time to the extent that there are issues within the pool, just totally different. So I think it's really exciting because there's a certain rigor that comes with, one, really having to underwrite every single manager that you invest in, but two, just get smarter on credit and the collateral, right? Like, I think that there's this perception that private credit CLOs are less transparent. And in my opinion, that couldn't be further from the truth. I think that there are certain metrics that don't get publicly blasted, but if you sign an NDA, you can actually get more credit metrics in some case and more information and more current information than you get in broadly syndicated. So there's not visible prices, you know, tradable prices, market prices, end of day prices. That much is true, but there's other stuff that you can get. And I think that our whole market, in by virtue of being more cognizant of PCLOs and starting to look more into PCLOs, is getting smarter on credit, which I think is really exciting. And I think it's exciting because it really opens the possibility of like thinking more critically about not just, okay, is it tier one, tier two, tier three? That's the difference within BSL. And that's obviously oversimplifying it. But, you know, beyond that, really thinking critically about like, okay, well, what are other corporate instruments that are financeable via securitization? And how are we using this technology and what is the kind of realm of possible? So I'm really excited, not just about the amount of education and, you know, change from the investor base that's happening as a result of, you know, just getting smarter on private credit, but really the possibilities for the products in the future.
Amazing. And we're also very excited about it. So I'm sure we'll keep the conversation going long after this this podcast. But one final question before we wrap up, and it's a difficult one, but one you're no doubt expecting. How many debut managers do you think we're going to see come to the market this year?
Well, I will say, I think that, you know, historically, it's been pretty consistent. It's like six or seven, you know, so I think that we are on track for that number. But I do think that because it's a really strong issuance year, you might see a little bit more than that this year.
Well, thank you so much, Christine. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks, Tom.
That's all, folks. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Feel free to get in touch with me with any comments, questions, or suggestions. And remember to like and follow The Last Tranche for more conversations about CLOs. Thanks, everyone.